America, Episode 10, A Means Without End. States of the Body Produced by Love, Nisha Ramaya, Friday, 22nd of November, 2019.
I'm just going to say thank you for being here. Thank you for having me. And I have to do a special shout out to my my parents and my Glasgow Indian aunties and uncles. So thanks for being here. Okay, this is going to be in two parts. Futures, flowers. You want to imagine futures. You want to create futures objects in your mind and to hold them there until your mind turns into the shapes of these objects. The practice of imagining turns into the rightness of action according to the metaphysics of the ritual, so that flowers formed by the hands become the fruits of the practice, become abolitions, efflorescence. The ritual must be repeated until it turns on itself, its objects destroying their causality. You turn on yourself, move into the void in yourself, and begin. The red door to the temple is guarded by two elephants, both vomiting rainbows. Their vomit meets in the sky above them and fuses to form a lunette. The lunette is decorated with brides-to-be standing a corpse width apart. One is to be enjoyed, the other worshipped only. The brides are protected by lions, who are nothing like the real police sitting across the street from the real temple. They protect and enforce the reality that requires them. You do not require them. You prefer these lions who prop open their mouths with the heads of your enemies. You decide to substitute yourself for your enemies, abolishing liberalism by means of liberalism, placing your head in the lion's mouth. Lying between the brides, you realize that your body is corpse width. Yours is the corpse by which you must enter. Past the first hurdle, you throw colored powders on the space where the door should be, trying to make it appear in your mind. It's a jeweled throne on an island of butter in an ocean of milk. It's a forest of the lotus of the heart that abides in the citadel. It's a red door to a temple in the cremation ground inside your body. Mind guards the door to consciousness. The colored powders fall into a geometric pattern on the ground of being and non-being. You lie down and puff your way in. It's easy. You make it all the way, breaking through three straight lines, discontinuing tenses. Blow time out of mind. Let futures, flowers. Another line appears, a dark line formed by a cloud's shadow. The cloud rearranges itself in the sky. It's an elephant. It's your mind stuck in mind. The dark line marks its time of death. The elephant bursts into hundreds of thousands of silvery spheres. You stand in the shadows, looking up, mouth wide open, in awe of futurity. You swallow spheres. Internalize obstacles that you may pass them through your body, past memories of elephants, past clouds. The line increases and covers ground. It's the side of a circle accounting for error. The circumference is planted with golden arms, reaching upward, stretching to hold each other's hands at the apex. You know, there are no multicolored hands across the world. There are oceans of wine surrounding mountains of flesh. Nevertheless, you visualize a circle of arms raising a cone of power, vitriol crystallizing into bluestone. True solidarity is a beautiful and charmingly corrosive process. What if the future is faceless? Return to the shadows. You project your shadows onto the clouds, casting your self-esteem, all those little mothers, into outer space. Mind rays alight. Little mothers carry lamps out of your body and up to the stars. Infatuated with darkness, you resist their advice. Luminosity is the state of things that are luminous and also of things that are dark. You want to be left alone with your mind rays, a cosmic puppet dangling in the grandeur of the inner void, your desirelessness. But you are surrounded by kissy noises, resonating concentrically. Everyone and everything is kissing, except you. Your mouth is stuffed full of flowers, and even those flowers are kissing each other inside your mouth as if you were simply a space in which desire takes place. You struggle to imagine kissing from the perspective of your mouth. Your tongue is a brazen plate struck by lightning and struck and struck. You know that subtle sounds are better, unstruck sounds are best, and bite down on your tongue. You bite off the head of your enemy and join in with anticipation. The cracks in the walls of the temple are stuffed with little yellow chrysanthemums. You remove these flowers and destabilize the temple in your race to one-pointed consciousness, which is the brain-facing lotus at the crown of your skull. The crown hides a hole into which sky drips, feeding the thousand-petaled lotus that blooms behind and occasionally into and out of your eyes, your ears, your mouth. Feel the petals tickle your mind when you shake your head out of time. Feel the roots of the lotus penetrate the wet soil of sky and spread into the infinite wetness of space. No, not yet. The temple stands. You must grasp the triangle, for one who is not a triangle must not worship triangles. The lines and angles suggest hundreds of thousands of awkward bodies, golden arms, sword fighting, sunbeams, laser quests, illuminated parts. But you strive for unbroken light, sectionless consciousness, sparkling waves of bliss. The triangles exist in another dimension. They cast shadows in the shape of cubes, in the shape of spheres, cast these shadows upon your body, cover your body in perfect solids. How absurd, the masters say, to spread perfection on your body like jam on bread. But you delight in hyperreality, this calculated immersion in pleasure. You pass yourself through your body without breaking your body. You make your shadows dance. Your shadows hold hands, rub beaks, play footsie, totter rosily, cheek to cheek, bumpity bump, bump, bump. They circle each other, full body, bobbing. They take each other by surprise, stand to attention, and stargaze. The absolute soul of the universe is an assemblage of migratory birds whose agitation is indeed creation. You understand that when they say something about sleeping badly, the death of death whose destruction is liberation, what they really mean is that they sleep badly. You say something about sleeping badly. You say nothing about the seeds in your heart, the roots creeping into your circulatory system, the seedlings poking out of your center of consciousness. In truth, your desires are infinite, your actions infinitesimal. You are as close as you can get to the center before sneezing. The temple inside you implodes in a mess of cremation ash, yellow pollen, sonic twinkle, and third eye dot. You are as far away as you can get from the world without renouncing it. Opposing yourself, you do all this as an offering to me. These flowers formed by the hands, this worship through the flesh, these lightning flashes of social life, this rhythm through rightness and opposition. You turn out of these objects, turning out. And when I was reading that, I was thinking about how there is a real mathematician in the room, and I part of how I wrote that poem is watching Number File channel on YouTube. And next time I will write after reading Fernando Zalamea. So now I would like to take a listening walk across the rackety bridge between tantric poetics and black study alongside musician and composer Alice Coltrane. I'll play extracts of three recordings, providing some context first, and then read the poems. A brief note on the tantric metaphysics of sound that informs the poems. The bliss that creates the universe is understood as cosmic throb, vibration, motion, sound. Thus, sound is causal energy, especially imperceptible sound. The Sanskrit word for voice, speech, language, and sound, Vaj, is grammatically feminine and personified as a goddess who pervades the universe, as well as lots of little goddesses who reside in our bodies, speaking us into being. John Coltrane, Peace on Earth, concert in Japan, 1966. Peace on Earth was composed by John Coltrane and recorded live in Japan in 1966, featuring Coltrane, Pharoah Sanders, Rashid Ali, Jimmy Garrison, and Alice, John's wife. Frania Berkman, ethnomusicologist and Alice Coltrane's biographer, argues that Alice had a profound influence on John's music, finding significance in the fact that he became committed to free jazz, non-sectarian spirituality, and Indian philosophy and music during the years he spent with Alice, 1963 to 67. According to Berkman, Alice's piano playing in this recording exemplifies her talents as a concert pianist and her experimentations with gospel, blues, and avant-garde jazz techniques. Piano, as if her chromatic fleets could meet the historical condition of fleets. There is no conditionality of any kind in the feel of her time. The sound of playing together, really playing together, a band all clothed with ears, fingertips, foot taps, puff cheeks puckered with ears. Collective improvisation demands the nth root of ears, when n is assumed to be the number of silent silences they've shared. They play into the weight of history, billowing sheets of sound, twisting history as their main cause, playing out unsound pieces of possibly everlasting sound. Sound is the possibility of sound and may not be sound itself. I, gross sounds arise and become subtle. Not I, subtle sounds are reabsorbed by the nascent state. What's existence on open dialogue elsewhere on earth? But why? What's co-signing messages meant straight for the top? What's meant? What's straight? What's top? What's listening out for the sound of the spheres of the unborn crying while the born are crying here? Cosmos manifests at a concert in Japan. Why here? Why here? Why here? Supramaterial vomit of the cosmos, premoralized destiny of the unborn. The audience claps in the room elsewhere here on earth. Sound is. Wherever there is desire or vibration or clapping of any kind, strike that om, 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 an everlasting peace not caused by a shock, as like produces like destroys like, as poison as the antidote for peace. Oh, om, om, a self-generating peace that disregards the signature, oft-time signature, to overblow the precedent set by the treaty. Oh, om, om, an unsound peace for freedom elsewhere here, for most freest elsewhere here on earth. Oh, om, an atonally temporal disregard, oh, for the trans-historically straight-lined centered falsified, for the everlasting disregard of everlasting peace, oh. Alice Coltrane, Going Home, Lord of Lords, 1971. After John's death in 1967, Alice started playing the harp and the electric organ. Whereas she associated the former instrument with John, she became interested in the latter during her travels in India with Swami Satchitananda. This recording features Alice playing both instruments in her version of Largo from Antonín Dvořák's New World Symphony. Dvořák composed his symphony in 1893 whilst living in the US and studying African American and Native American music. Berkman claims that the theme of the Largo was most likely modeled after the spirituals that Dvorak's Black American composition student Harry Burley sang for him. In 1922, William Arms Fisher set Largo to lyrics and titled the song Going Home, which became a popular gospel song and jazz standard, which Alice reset and reclaimed 50 years later. I found I just didn't need. I just didn't need drone. Need just didn't drone. Sense organs cut through the tune that this tune could be. Just didn't need. This tune takes place inside. I what? Inside earworm in indignity. Strings lay down staircase, impossible staircase, finding itself to be, going home, just didn't, getting. Anyone the sound of living alone? I found a way to be, I, what? Be, home, drone, unaccompanied. Anyone the sound of going home, super mundane and supreme. You, the harp, sunset. Blaze, harp, sink us into ourselves, dark wash away the lie of heart's low lights. Consciousness, snail us within, silence, blaze. This tune upscales us monochromatically. What? Moon drives us on to electro-organic heights. Impossible staircase, get us nowhere, get us raised up, ultra light beam lights. To going home, to stolen home, to reclamations, getting nowhere, to down home, drill down, drop off, white bread, heights, brave background, unscrew tune, invert ear, drip, buttery, be. Electro-organic slide we sound, sunset, all the friends we knew. Sound play with luminosity, invite light to the party, sunrise too soon. Most freest silence. Anyone else? The sound of self-inverting self, impossible staircase, a means of getting away. Anyone else laid down by lights, shot through with countersunk holes? Anyone else, body, bolt holes, tube lit, home, having home as its main cause? Anyone else, body, home, having home as its main cause? Snail shell, battle cry, resonance following most subtlest sound. Pour sand in ears to catch lightning strike. Trail sand through body home. Grit, glissando, irritate ear, glass, worm, too late. My harp sings despite itself, squirms heartily, my sun sets. You, ooh, ow, ow, lightning struck, my ears emit, I, supreme I, ow, ow, emanate earwax, homing device, I, this out, be, this out, be. Alice Coltrane, Govinda Jaya Jaya, Radha Krishna Nama Sankirtana, 1976. In the 1970s, Alice moved to California and began studying Vedic texts, chanting, and making devotional music with a small spiritual community. In 1983, she founded Shanti Anantam Ashram, allowing her students to live and worship together. The community would sing bhajans led by Alice, who fused Sanskrit texts with gospel, blues, and jazz stylings. This recording features Alice's students singing a popular bhajan to the cowherd god Krishna, which was also recorded by George Harrison in 1970 and by Kulashekar in 1996, who made it the first and only song in Sanskrit to reach the top 10 in the UK charts. Of living together, I, ow, ow, tickle the spark in disharmonic intervals, you, ooh, oh, cup, chin, ah. In a field, someone is falling, buttercup tickles my living alone. Someone is falling in buttercups alonefully. When? She, little mothers off the phonemes. All clothed with sound, ear-lined lips, germinating, words keeping word-bound, speech-clad, lovers apart, together, phonetic mitosis on the tip of the tongue. She generates a party made out of mantras. Someone is face down at the party, too full, too soon, i.e. ready to evolve. Syllabic bloat. Causal stress. I bursts open at the party. The aloneful party falls apart in a field, together, apart, together, in a field of one, a battlefield, the supreme I, eyes. She generates a party, skull cracks into chorus. Causal stress bursts into chorus. One must be identified with the sound of the spheres. Oh, ow, aum. One must sound out cracks in the foundations of the field, buttercups in the cracks, not a gladness too soon. Gladness only exists only too soon. Existence is the effect caused by vibrations of the existential potential. One is identified with the whole world and thus indifferent to it. One must identify the void in the whole world's heart with the void in one's own heart. The party changes its tune. Anyone else clapping? Everyone comes in on the clap, only too soon. Gladness comes in between claps. There are fields and fields of buttercups between claps, battlefields. The chorus is cowherded in between claps. In a field, someone is tidying. The cowherd gladly tidying chart success of any kind implies inequality of tensions. Everyone isn't wearing kaftans underneath it all. Everyone isn't keyboard players victorious over life, i.e. resigning it willfully. The chorus slows down for emphasis. One must lean back breakingly far back, failing one's rights of primogeniture. Discount bin appropriation, lie face down in the interval before the last vibration, the last clap back. Dissolution is the pinpricking of tensions. To a divine ear, homogeneity. To a divine ear, the divine ear must be dissolved.